You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The Clement Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
If you've got some questions, if you want to weigh in on the conversation around accountability, you're welcome to give me a call on 011-883-0702. We've got the UDM leader, Bantu Holomisa, joining us this hour. And I want us to talk about the role opposition parties play in our democracy and how effective that role has been, especially over the last couple of years. You know about the drama that we've been through in this country. And how do we make parliamentary oversight over the executive more effective? There are several examples I can cite of parliament's failure in its constitutional obligation to exercise oversight over the executive. Bantu Holomisa, General Bantu Holomisa, is the president of the UDM and joins us on the line. Thank you so much for making time, Mr. Holomisa. Good morning.
Good morning, Clemens. Good morning to our listeners.
So, I thought, where should we start and where should we start? And I thought maybe I should start where I started with my colleague Bongani Bingwa this morning, and I had some of the listeners treat me as well. And when we talk about these electoral reforms, hopefully at some point we're going to be able to elect a president directly. And one of the questions Bongani asked me when I told him you'll be coming on is, you know, sometimes he feels that as the UDM, you are comfortable with where you are and there's no ambition one day to be in government or to even be president. So maybe let's start off there. Is that something you think about as the leader of the UDM, that one day the UDM can be at the union buildings? Or if the electoral reforms are there and we can elect people directly, you could be president of the country?
Well, that has not yet dawned into my mind, although it is always an ambition for political party leaders. But in my case, I've been requested, for instance, by the former President Mandela after they expelled me, to come back and play a role in the government. But I felt that once, I believe in that saying which says, once bitten, twice shy, so I got a cold feet. But I told him that when it comes to issues of nation building, the ANC and himself can wake me up anytime, and I will help them without expecting any emoluments. And I've done that. You'll recall when there was a mutiny by the SANDF members who marched to union buildings. Guess what? President Zuma on the evening of that day said there was only one person who can stop this mutiny. That's General Holomisa. So Lindiwe Sisulu called me and then said, "Please help us. President says you must be involved in this." Then we assembled about 10 people and we solved it. So it's issues like those where one can assist without expecting to gain money. For instance, I was a commission there in the SANDF for 10 years, two terms. And I never claimed a cent for that. So to be president of the country, it depends on the situation. People are still using the current system as which parties parade presidents.
Yeah.
But the UDM, as you might be aware, has been calling for the electoral reforms as early as 1998, where we called for the people to elect direct their president. And also that there should be a mixed system like we see in the local government, where you have, where you include in the current proportional representation, you include constituency-based system.
Yes.
In that way, you will be in a position to improve the accountability. And at least, for instance, let's take this current scandal. If the members of parliament were elected to parliament, even if they come under the ANC, they would be saying, "Please, from our constituency, we say President Ramaphosa must go and must go on leave until the findings have been published by the police or whoever.
Mm.
In that way, we would be emulating what other people are doing in the world, especially those who claim that they are Democrats. If balance of probabilities is sufficient enough to leave, you do so in the interest of the party and the country, as well as the party.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about whether I've answered your question. But
no, you have. You have, sufficiently so. So since 1998, as the UDM, and there are other parties and stakeholders as well that have been calling for electoral reforms, the State Capture Commission itself is also reminding the parliament that this is what we need to look at. In fact, I'm reminded of the electoral task team that was chaired by Dr. Van Zyl Slabbert in 2003. I'm reminded of the 2017 high-level review panel on the assembly of key legislation, because that also recommended that parliament should amend the Electoral Act to provide for an electoral system that makes members of parliament accountable to defined constituencies on this proportional representation and constituency system for national elections. But there's no appetite, there's no political appetite, General Holomisa. Why do you think that is the case? Because sometimes I feel like even some parties in parliament, and not just the ANC, are not in support of this mix of our of the political system.
Well, it might well be that, but I speak on behalf of my party. But the truth of the matter is that no new legislation will come into effect in this country insofar as electoral reforms if that legislation is not supported by the majority party.
Mm.
Okay. So far, the proportional representation definitely it favors the ruling party. We have been calling for this at the risk of, because if it were to be implemented, it might be risky for small parties. But the bigger picture is to improve the accountability of whoever is the leader from whatever party in future. So it's not about us looking at our positions now, but we need to reform this electoral act.
Mm. How risky would it be for the smaller parties?
You see, maybe it's better now.
Mm.
5 years ago, I would have said it's going to be difficult for them. But mm-hmm. it's better now because Zondo once again has vindicated parties like UTM that the ANC is using the state resources through bogus companies like Bosasa, Chancellor House, to beef up their party coffers. But now that we would go into a constituency system, and also that cap, hopefully, is going to be closed. That cap of which ANC has been using to affect the playing field, which is not level because they are using state money.
Yeah.
Now that we can go to a constituency based system. So if there's no money coming from the parties, from the government, let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are chances that the small parties will be in a position to compete effectively with the so-called big party today because it was big, because it was using state resources. Close that tab first, then I can answer your question.
Mm. Yeah. So if we want to see members of parliament exercise effective oversight, we need to at least take away the worry that they have about political parties and what may happen to them if they effectively exercise that oversight responsibility. And I know there are many parties in parliament that have tried, you know, to get that National Assembly to establish some ad hoc committees, whether it's to investigate the influence of the Gupta family or it's on Kandla, maybe to look at the allegations against Bosasa. And the ANC has always used its majority. And sometimes even when some of its members didn't agree or thought we must have an Eskom inquiry or we must have a Bosasa inquiry or look into the influence of the Gupta family, they couldn't express that or act towards that because the party position said this. So I want us to talk about party discipline, because our constitution is based on a party list proportional representation system. But this state capture report acknowledges that while that is the case, the party discipline, yes, is legitimate. It's an indispensable feature of a party-based democratic system. But there's often that tension between the party discipline, the oversight obligation of MPs, and the oath of office taken by all MPs. Do you think that the suggestion by the State Capture Commission that maybe there must be laws and even legislation that can protect members of parliament from losing their party membership if they go against the party position, will that help at least get some effective oversight, accountability when it comes to parliament's role?
In fact, your question is directly related to why the members of parliament always go to court instead of fighting their battles inside the house. It's precisely because we have since realized that this majoritarian system we have is actually the responsibility of the corrupt system we are having. And it starts when we ask questions to the executives as opposition party, and they don't respond to those questions. That's the start of the rot. Because these ministers have long usurped the powers of the accounting officer. And it's them who tells the DGs and the chief directors and everybody there, the technocrats, no, that tender must go to so-and-so, must go to that company. This one must go to Chancellor House and so on and so on. So the UDM took a stand on that because we are fed up with this behavior. We went to the court, to Concord, to ask that members of the ANC and other members in the House must be allowed to vote secretly. Because we could see this abuse, exactly the question you are asking, that these people are being held at ransom whilst their bosses are committing crimes.
And what's worst, I suppose, sometimes is that things are quite clear, because this conflict of MPs' oath and affirmation and the party instruction was actually dealt with by the Constitutional Court. It said that in an event of conflict between upholding constitutional values and party loyalty, MPs' oath or affirmation of faithfulness to the public and their obedience to the Constitution and laws must actually take precedence. But as we know, that is going to be ignored. And people will always talk about their allegiance to, even though it's to the constitution, but they talk about their loyalty to the party. So we've spoken about parliamentary oversight. I want us to talk about the responsibility that opposition parties have, General Holomisa. How effective has that role been that opposition parties play? Because sometimes we deal with quite, you know, sensitive, critical, important issues that require opposition parties to come into play. And sometimes they use those issues as to play politics, for instance. I know sometimes the DA is often accused of being, they're always opposing something. Sometimes they are not interested in sitting down and saying, what are the solutions? What is your assessment as the leader of the UDM in the role of opposition parties and how effective that role has been in our democracy?
The role of the opposition parties in South Africa has been effective. You wouldn't have today the Zondo Commission's findings on state capture had it not been for the collective of the opposition to make a noise and even go to the extent of defending the then public protector, who was called names. And it is the opposition, not the ANC MPs, who made it a point that the State Capture Commission of Inquiry would start. You still remember when we went to the Concord, when the president then was fighting tooth and nail that there should be this thing. So we have played our role. But in terms of the strategy, each opposition party has got its own style.
Mm.
I'll make an example with the UDM. If you go to our website, www.udm.org.za, if you will find that almost every week, month, and so on, we write letters on behalf of the communities where we engage a DG or a minister or even the president on matters which needs their attention. Also in the House, we also contribute. But we don't oppose anything that moves. We select our battles.
Mm. Do you think sometimes that's the mistake that some parties make? They just oppose anything that moves because they feel the pressure to say something about it, even when it's unnecessary. I remember General Holomisa, and I don't know if you were part of, you probably were, when we started dealing with COVID in 2020 in March, before even the hard lockdown, or just after the hard lockdown, the president called a meeting with opposition parties. Yes. Did you attend that meeting as well?
Yes, I attended.
I mean, at that time, at that time, we were dealing with a pandemic, a disease we don't know much about. So you needed at the time opposition parties to sit down with government and say, how can we help? But then you also had other parties who just wanted to go in and attack something and differ with something and not read the room, where South Africans were nervous, including their constituency, and they just wanted everybody across the political divide to come sit on the table and say, how do we assist as a collective? This is not the time to be playing politics. So do you think that sometimes some parties are just quick to respond and say something, even when there's no value in it?
No, in defense of those so-called parties whom you are choosing of whatever, you must remember that at the beginning of this process, the president called all the leaders, parties, especially those in parliament, and consulted broadly with our society, traditional leaders and so on. And we could see that as leaders of opposition that this project is in the national interest. We have to support it. And we gave him a full support. And also, we even had a photo shoot with him there in that Union Buildings.
Mm.
So we felt, important people are taking a picture with the president. Guess what? That was the last time he called us to brief us on the issue of pandemic. Whilst when he's on TV, he would say he has briefed other institutions. Because we represent people. People were complaining to say, after a month or two, they were already saying, this thing is handicapping the economy. Can't the government review it? I think it was after 3 months or so. But the government was not listening. Then this is where now some opposition came in and started to attack the government. That was justifiable because, two, the voters who voted for us are asking why parliament is not briefed by the president and the cabinet about this pandemic. Why is he taking decisions from a group of cabal outside his cabinet? What did they call that thing? CCMA? What's CCMA, man? There was something good, with many CCCs.
Mm. I'm going to take the latest in our Witness News headlines. And then when we come back, I would like to hear General Holomisa's view on what we often hear, right, when we talk about the failures of the ANC. And then some people will say, but there are no viable alternatives. And I want to get his views on that. I want to get his views on the coalition government as well. And whether, in fact, our political parties or political party leaders are mature enough to lead that vision. Because that's where we are headed, right? But the experience that we've had in Nelson Mandela Bay, in Johannesburg, in Tshwane, well, there's less stability in Ekurhuleni than in some of these areas I've mentioned. But my goodness, if that is a sign of how things will be when we even get into coalition government at the national level, then we're in for really troublesome times. So we'll talk about that as well after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines. Give me a call on 011-883-0702.
702.
The Clement Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 10:33. We are in conversation with the UDM leader, Bantu Holomisa. We've been talking about the role opposition parties play in our democracy and how effective that role has been, especially given everything else that we've been through in this country. We've spoken about parliamentary oversight over the executive and how more effective it can be. The general seems to have some confidence in the recommendations by the State Capture Commission to somehow make parliament more effective, right? And the question is, will Parliament get to doing the job where it discusses these legislative changes? Because that's what we need, right? We've had reports before that have spoken about the need for this constituency-based system of proportional representation, because that would have several advantages. But here we are, still talking about it. And there are some reports that have clearly been ignored from the past. So I'm going to go to your calls, some of your WhatsApp voice notes as well, for some questions you have for General Holomisa. But General, before I go to the calls, I wanted to ask you about, while we're still talking about opposition parties, every time someone raises the failures of the ANC and how people need to vote the ANC out of power, there are some South Africans who call in and say, oh, but who do I then vote for? So they feel like they don't have an option. So there's no viable alternative to the African National Congress. Do you think there is, so if the ANC was in power, out of power tomorrow, do you think there's a viable political party that is capable enough to take over?
Well, if the ANC is out of power tomorrow, it would have been removed by the voters. And the voters would have made their choice long before the election takes place. In this case, for instance, here is the Zondo Commission's findings. We must not fool our public. The findings of Zondo Commission will not be effectively implemented by the current ANC government, because it is targeting, is talking about its, about ANC and its leaders.
Mm.
Therefore, the parties now have got a great opportunity when they make their own manifestos, and even starting now to educate the voters that, look, these so-called struggle stalwarts who parade and masquerade as Democrats have actually caused misery to yourselves. Look, the infrastructure is collapsing, which a first world infrastructure which they inherited in 1994. The small towns are in a bad state. I mean, railway lines right in the city of Johannesburg being vandalized in front of them. So all these things, we need to educate the people. The alternative is there. The alternative will be brought by the voters. All we need to do is to make sure that those people who didn't go and vote and say, then what's the point of voting because there's no alternative?
Mm.
They are doing disservice to our democracy. because we should be now, especially now that the ANC has been exposed, that it has been using government money, which you have been saying so. So it's high time that we tell them that the backlogs and imbalances of the past will never be addressed as long as it is ANC in the liver, because they steal the money.
Yeah.
So the issue, what is important now is for the opposition parties in parliament, parties outside parliament, the civil society who thinks alike should have or converge under one roof and say, what is the way forward? And whatever alternative we are coming up against should not be against the original agenda. The original agenda of this country, which we all endorse, was to improve the quality of all South Africa. But I hear that there are, what is this thing held, led by Reverend Chikane and former secretary of...
the ACDP?
No, what? No. Reverend Chikane.
Oh, Chikane, defend our democracy.
Yeah, man, these are recycled fellows who are... What are they going to tell us? Because they were in the government. All of them, most of them, the leadership is ANC. So they are there to save the ANC. No, we can't be part of that. Sorry.
So their argument, General Holomisa, is that they were part of the ANC before the ANC was this quote-unquote deeply corrupted. And they feel as the stalwarts, so to speak, you know, they can come and somehow help the party in its renewal program. So as opposed to forget about
please don't fool us. Please, they mustn't fool us. They were DGs. He was a DG at the presidency. Some of them were DGs in other departments. All these Siyanqoba rallies, which we have been witnessing, they were part of that, allowing the government monies to go and fund the rallies and their conferences. The SOEs are collapsing. They were there.
But to be fair, General Holomisa, let's look at Cheryl Karalysis, for instance. She was the chairperson of the board of SAA, and she's one of the people that resisted the state capture project and had to be removed as a result of that. So not all of them were just willing participants who were involved and complicit in the criminality and the architecture of state capture. Jonas, Jonas was the deputy finance minister, also said no when he was offered money.
No. Chief, the issue of Gupta's, the Gupta files, will never be closed as long as those Gupta's have not come back to South Africa. So we are not going to be lectured by both Jonas that they denied six million and so on. What led him to say that? Sorry. But anyway, wish them good luck. They can do that. But we want an assembly of South Africans who have been victimized by these decisions of corruption, by the same people who are now saying, let's renew. Renew what?
The once mighty ANC. Okay, let me ask you about a coalition government, because it really looks like that's where we're headed. You've had your own share of experience as the UDM in Nelson Mandela Bay. Do you think political party leaders have the maturity to be involved in coalition government? In other words, put your political differences aside and let's focus on delivering services, because that's really at the core what the coalition government actually require. As soon as you play politics, then it's going to be messy, like we've seen it be messy in some of the metros. Do you think that political maturity?
I think all parties have learned a lesson on the performance of local government, coalition government. What I've suggested to other political parties and we have discussed this in the House and opposition parties, was that we need to agree on a policy, which would include the ruling party, of course, on what kind of rules and regulations must we agree on even long before the elections. Mm. So to say, if you are going to have a coalition at national level, at provincial and local government in future, what are the rules of the game? Because you cannot be expected to form a government after the day the elections were announced. Then you are given 14 days to come up with a cabinet and so on. Mm. Elsewhere, in countries like Germany, they even take 3 months. Because you have to be clear about why do you want to get involved into the coalition. Is it about the opposition or is it about your constituency you stand for? So in that agreement, therefore, of those parties, you must make sure that the people who voted for you, you represented them, the services will be delivered to them, and so on. In that way, this thing of bullying, of people thinking that because they've got more numbers than the others, if they had numbers, they should have won the election. But once you go to other parties, the other parties are going to say, well, my manifesto is as follows. Can we integrate your manifesto with mine? Mm. Such a thing should start even before. That means you need to have a pre-election coalition arrangement. But such arrangements, the state also must guide to say you cannot be expected to form a government within 14 days. At least let's give you a month at local government or 3 months at national government. The coalitions are here to stay, but let us be ready for them if they take place at national level.
Hmm. How much work do you think is being done to get ready for them at national level? Like those rules that you're talking about, that must be agreed upon before they are even formed. Like how much work do you think has been done so far?
Not much, but I'm happy to report to the public that last year, if I'm not mistaken, or 2020, we did go to Germany. Remember, the chief whip of the ANC, the deputy minister of finance, and other political parties, except the EFF, I don't think it went there. And some other parties did not go there. But what we learned from there is that the cooperation amongst the political parties, be it in the power, not in power, powerful positions, is a key to have a successful coalition. So I hope, therefore, that early next year, because people now are focusing on other issues, early next year, the political parties in parliament, all of them, would be in a position to say, let us converge and make sure that we agree on how do we deal with these problems we're seeing at local government, and also if this comes to be the policy at national level, so be it. What kind of policy must we follow?
Okay. I've got voice notes lined up. Some people have got some questions. Some have got some inputs. I've got calls as well. We're going to go to them after this break. It's 14 feet before 11 o'clock.
702.
WhatsApp Clement.
On 072-702-1702.
All right, let's go straight to your WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702.
702. Hello?
WhatsApp Clement. Yo, can you please ask Uchenene if the UDM is ready to govern? I see you're asking him about alternative. I thought you immediately say the UDM is an alternative. So maybe ask the general if UDM is ready to govern, if it were given the opportunity to do so.
All right. Thank you very much for that WhatsApp voice note. General Holomisa, a listener, is asking, is the UDM ready to govern? And it's a question that Mokwati as well is raising on Twitter, who says, Clement, as much as I like General Holomisa, I doubt that he's ready to take over the leadership of the country because he's not taking me into his confidence by selling the UDM as an alternative. He's enjoying being on the opposition benches, and one wonders if he will return in 2024. Your response to that question?
If you were to say, am I ready to govern, I would answer you to say yes, but UDM's government would not be a government of only members of the UDM. We would rather, given the experience we've witnessed in the past 28 years, we would rather work with other political parties. This one-party dominance is the one which we've been fighting against because it breeds corruption. I would rather UDM be requested, that it lead a government of a coalition government. Then you know that you will have experts across the board, and also you will have the representations, and that the development will be based on the geographical needs and problems in those areas. Some of the provinces are forgotten provinces. They are just used as voting cows. People are used as voting cows.
So if you are given that opportunity, General Holomisa, to lead a coalition government, let's say after 2024, for argument's sake. So when you talk about experts across the field, because other parties then are involved, so you would have some people from the ANC, from the DA, you would have academia as well. Is that what you mean?
All over. Because we need to fix this country. We need to recapture the lost ground. We have lost a lot of ground. I mean, the infrastructure we inherited in 1994, we should have picked back on that and be a bigger country. Look at countries like Kigali, who have no resources. They are doing far better than us, Rwanda. No.
Let's take some more calls. Ngaka, you're in Reimsach. Good morning.
Good morning, Madumeja. I just wanted to take this opportunity to ask the General Bantu Holomisa regarding his future plans for his party, UDM. The medium, long-term goals, we have 2024, we have 2028. How is he going to grow his party? By involving the youth, the young people. Is there any youth league in UDM? And the people who are within his party who are young, is he able to take their advices, their innovative ideas how to grow the party? And because that is perpetuating the gorilla or the giant ANC which we are. We need parties who are going to be able to compete on par with ANC. But in his future, what are his plans to grow this party?
Great question. Ngaka and Remsach, thank you. General Holomisa?
Already, we do have a youth league in the UTM. We have a student wing in the UTM called UDESMO. The deputy president of the UTM is a young fellow. The secretary of the UTM in the Eastern Cape is also a young fellow, an attorney, and a councillor. If you go to our local government councillors, you will find that we've paraded the young people. Most of them are from the universities through the UDESMO students movement of the UDM. We might have done more if we had access of a slush fund like the ANC. But now that they have been exposed, I hope they fund us. The relevant funders of democracy in South Africa will raise their hand and say, we were wrong by putting all the resources in this big party because it has messed up the country.
Defo, you're in Sharpeville. Good morning.
Good morning, and how are you?
Good, good. How's it?
Good, Clement.
Just one question for the general. 28 years down the line, the African people remain dispossessed of their land. What would the UDM government do to deal with the land question in South Africa? Thank you.
Thank you, Tefo. General Holomisa?
I've traveled all over the world. I can't think of any region I've not been to. And I've seen how the land is distributed in those countries. It's simple. If people today are saying we must give land to the my fellow Africans, meaning that we must take the farm as it is of Fantonde and give it to Holomisa as it is, then that would mean that perpetually would never distribute the land. So therefore, the land tenure system would have to be changed in so far if the UDM is in government. That means here are people who are living in the squatter camp. Adjacent to them, there is a piece of land which can be subdivided for them to build better homes and also grow vegetables for themselves. And then you go to the rural areas, you will find also that there are tracts and tracts of land whose farms are owned by one person. And then you take people, for instance, who were taken to Transkei, to Siskei, remove forceful removal. Now you should be beginning to say, let's bring back those people, partition that land, and they must produce food, they must produce whatever is needed. So that's the only way of distributing land. But if people are thinking that we are going to give a farm belonging to Madam X or Mr. X to so-and-so, we are not going to do that because that's a perpetual slavery.
So how do we then ensure the transfer? Because some of the ANC policies, like willing buyer, willing seller, has failed. And now, as I was reading their policy discussion documents, they seem to still be placing that responsibility to give land in the hands of the farmers, even though they know what history has shown them. There's never that interest to do so.
One of the things which Matanzima taught us in Transkei, if you go, for instance, to Transkei today, 28 towns which used to form that part of the region, which are part of that region, 28 towns, the land in the CBD, the land in the urban areas and so on, the dwellings, they were sold to Transkeians, taken away from the white control. These things depend on the political will by those who are in power. But the beauty about it, he says Transkeians must buy that land at cost, not on market value. So if you go there now, the land which is that part of the land was at one stage owned by the Transkeians, whether they have sold it to the Pakistanians and so on and other people, I don't know what's going on now. Here at home, the Constitution of South Africa can also be developed, or a legislation, let me put it that way, can be developed to make sure that we help the poor of the poorest, who were forcefully removed in the first place in their land. Why must you want to be paid now money on market value, whereas you forcefully removed these people? That's a moral question.
A moral question that still has to be answered. General Bantu Holomisa, thank you so much for making time. He's the UDM president and member of parliament.